House Bill 3661, we have a work session.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, House Bill 3661, was before the committee yesterday, and it's before the committee today on the work session. Hopefully in your packets you have the A8, amendments to the bill. You recall this is the bill regarding precursors of methamphetamine and new legislation on those. Senator Metzger yesterday brought up his concerns about the fact that in sections 4, 5, 7, and 8, new crimes are created for the possession of certain precursors, but there was not a mens rea in that, so that you would not need to allege a mens rea to prove it. So you'll see that in each of those areas, the A amendment will create a knowingly standard so that the prosecution must prove that the person knowingly possessed the separate precursors to sustain a conviction. On the other part of the A8 amendment is that there is an affirmative defense created. An affirmative defense means that the defense must prove by a preponderance of the evidence that the person possessed a precursor substance for a lawful purpose. That applies to Section 4, 5, 7, 8 of the bill. The main exception to that would be Section 6, which is the unlawful possession of ephedrine, pseudoephedrine, and phenylpropanolamine.
It's my nose spray.
That does not contain an affirmative defense.
All right, I move. Go ahead, sir. Amendments. House Bill 3661.
Senator Courtney moves the adoption of the A8 amendments to House Bill 3661. Discussion.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to thank Ms. Prinz and the Chair for addressing those issues. And I know this is an important piece of legislation, and I fully support it now.
All right. Where's OCDL? You guys are thrilled with this now, right? Don't say I didn't ever do anything for you. No objections?
I move House Bill 3661 as amended to the Senate for it to pass. It's really the same thing.
Don't
they like it? You guys like it, don't you? Yeah. No, don't talk.
No, don't talk. Nodding is okay.
Okay, fine. Senator Courtney moves.
No. I move House Bill 3661 as amended in the Senate for the due pass.
Okay. Senator Courtney moves House Bill 3661 as amended by the committee to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, so
ordered. Thank you very much.
And 2381. Possible reconsideration. Why are we doing this? We have conflict amendments.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that is correct. It's my understanding there was a conflict between House Bill 2381 and House Bill 2374.
They'd come up to me. There was concern as to why this was happening. Now I understand it's a conflict. I was just trying to acknowledge that that's what was going on. I'm keeping a keen eye. I didn't know why it was being brought back.
Okay.
But go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right. It's okay.
My understanding is that Mr. Jim Marquis was a proponent of this bill. He's okay with this. Marilyn O'Dell, counsel on this bill, said that this was to resolve the conflict between the two bills.
All right. Mr. Chair, I move the -A4 amendment to House Bill 2381.
Okay, we actually need a motion to suspend the rules.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules for purpose of reconsidering the vote by which we sent House Bill 2381 to the Senate floor.
Senator Courtney moves for unanimous consent to reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2381 was voted before for due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Hearing none.
Mr. Chair, I move we reconsider the vote on House Bill 2381.
Senator Courtney moves that we reconsider the vote on House Bill 2381. Discussion? Any objections?
Mr. Chair, I move the -A4 amendments to House Bill 2381.
Senator Courtney moves the adoption of the A4 amendments to House Bill 2381. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2381 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Marilyn's coming around.
Senator Courtney moves House Bill 2381 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Senator Duncan, did you notice that four consecutive motions? Did you notice how I made each of them? Did you notice what I did there? Did you watch the flow?
I didn't pay attention.
Mr. Chair, we need a carrier on 2381 and 3661.
I thought I was the carrier.
Who was the carrier on 2381 originally?
I think I was.
Okay.
Senator Duncan.
But maybe Senator Courtney was, since he has successfully carried four.
I'll let you make your move.
Senator Duncan?
Senator Duncan's going to carry 2381. Senator Courtney will carry 3661.
I'd certainly like to have Senator Courtney be my backup.
Unless you guys want to trade. And then 2942, if you're here for that bill, that's going to be set over until Monday.
Oh, thank you.
What is?
2942. And I guess our work session, where are we? Brother, which one are you ready for? We're going to recess for a while. Yeah. Work session, Senate Bill 920. Marilyn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You should have before you the dash...
Not mine on this thing.
The dash 2 amendment to Senate Bill 920. As you may recall, this was the bill to collect buccal or blood samples from all felons. Currently, there is in statute, a list of crimes for which we're collecting samples, and this would expand it. It would retain the misdemeanors that are currently on the list, but would go to all felons. It includes a testing priority for those samples that the state police believes and provides that the priority kicks in if they're unable to, due to lack of funds, test all of the samples that they receive. It also includes a provision for collection of samples from any individual that has been convicted of one of these crimes but is currently on parole, probation, or post-prison supervision. It, in addition, because there's always been a historic tie-in between the collection of samples from juveniles and the list of crimes that's collected for adults, the collection is limited to the crimes that were currently collected for juveniles. And that's in section 4 of the bill on page 6. Do you have the right amendment?
No, I think I do.
Okay, dash 2.
Dash 2.
920-2.
Right. It'll be one of my famous 3-minute recesses.
Okay. to do like I did.
Now, this well, they come up with some chairs. I won't force the chair.
Can Mr. Dixon come up and chat with us about kind of the way that the amendments are constructed to this bill?
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Tom Dixon, the Director of the Forensic Services Division for the Oregon State Police. We perform the forensic analysis for the state of Oregon on for DNA analysis. Did you have a specific question you'd like me to address, or let me just do a short recap?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it would be helpful if you could talk about the database, what your legal restrictions are on use of the database, agencies you may share information with, and in what form that information is shared.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think just a quick recap. 91, the legislature allowed the Oregon State Police to begin DNA work and also collecting a database or establishing a database of convicted offenders. At that time, it was for murder and sex offenses, those type of crimes. Currently, let me back up. In 1999, the legislature added burglary and assault, burglary in the first degree and assault in the first degree to our database. It currently we have about 17,000, slightly over 17,000 convicted individuals in Oregon's database. In 1991, when we were given approval, we were also given approval to participate in what's called CODIS, which is a federal databasing system. It's combined offender DNA indexing system. This particular system is overseen by the FBI. The vision of CODIS was always to have states do the databasing, the 50 states individually maintain a state database, and then upload a simple code of the DNA to the national database. That came online about a year and a half ago. We are uploading now to CODIS. It's now been automated. We've been doing it manually for a while. But what Oregon sends to the FBI is simply a code of the DNA. It does not send any information about the individual. This allows the FBI and other states, for criminal justice purposes only, to search that code. If that code hits on information found at a crime scene, that individual state or police agency would contact the Oregon State Police and provide information through the judicial process, at which time we would work with them on identifying the individual. The person's identity does not go with the code. There's very strict limitations on what we can provide and who we can provide the information to.
And the relationship of your responsibilities as a law enforcement agency with the handling of DNA as it relates to Senate Bill 114 that this committee passed out?
114 does not really affect our ability to share with criminal justice agencies. It does affect our ability or anyone with the DNA information from misusing it inappropriately. So if we are giving statutory authority how we can utilize that information, if we obviously act outside that authority, then we would fall under those parameters. But at this point, we only share that index.
All right. Any discussion, questions? Senator Brady.
Thank you.
You said that there are 17,000 entries in your existing database for DNA?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, yes, slightly over 17,000.
Okay. What would the total of that database be if this were passed, with this huge expansion of the people who would be providing DNA?
I have some, Mr. Chair and Senator Burdick, I do have some information as far as the felony. The number of felons arrested annually in Oregon is just over 14,000, according to, these are people convicted and entering the correctional system in some manner. It was provided by Mr. Phil Lemon, just over 14,000 annually. Currently, people that are under supervision or have already been convicted of these crimes that we do not collect, or we have not yet collected, there's approximately 31,000 convicted felons that this bill in its entirety would impact on a backlog, and then at that point, slightly over 14,000 a year.
And what about the juveniles? What kind of numerical impact would that be?
Juveniles really wouldn't change. This bill does not change the number of juveniles coming in. I currently don't have the volume on juveniles right now that we're receiving. Much, much smaller.
Okay, and to follow up, Mr. Chairman, if there were an abuse of the system, because you have the data in your control that matches the person's name with the DNA, although you don't send that out, you send that out under code. You have it in your possession. If there is an abuse of that data, for example, if it were somehow to end up in the hands of a life insurance company or a health insurance company which used it to discriminate against the blood relatives of a person who had provided DNA, for example, who would be liable for damages under Senate Bill 114? How would that work? What would the penalty provisions look like in that scenario?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, the specifics on that I can't tell you, other than with we are giving specific authority on how to release information. If we violate that, the state of Oregon obviously is the deep pocket responsibility, but the individual that released the information is also liable for that information, the same as we are with our fingerprint database or anything else that's confidential. So that would be both the state of Oregon, the department, and the individuals are liable.
Chairman, another question. If you'll be expanding this to roughly 48,000 people right from the get-go, close to 50,000 people, if this were to pass, do you think that is, are you at all concerned about the potential liability of having that much DNA in your possession, given the sensitivity that people have over these privacy issues?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, no. There are extremely strict controls through the CODIS program, not only on Oregon, but nationally. We have very strict processes and procedures we have to follow, thorough auditing. Feel very comfortable with the security of the information and our requirements in managing it.
I have a question.
Senator Corbin.
Of the, okay, it was 31 of 46,000 that you'd reach new as a result of this bill that were passed. How many of them have a fingerprint on the file now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, that varies. I can't give you the exact number, how many would have fingerprints. The law says that we should have the majority, if not all, fingerprints. However, the collection of fingerprints is not 100%. That occurs when a person is supposed to occur when a person's arrested. Frequently, people are cited, not actually lodged due to crowding. So our collection of fingerprints is not 100%.
But if they've been convicted, they'd have a fingerprint, wouldn't they, somewhere?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, in theory, that's supposed to occur, but again, we know we do not have all fingerprints collected. The felonies and sex crimes are supposed to submit fingerprints. However, that's not always occurs.
Any questions? Mr. Dixon, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
All right. With that, we're going to be adjourned until 5:30. No, not being slapped.